Comedy Fix, the podcast all about innovative performers and fresh ideas in performance and comedic theory. My name is Jamie Parkin, and I'm going to be your main host for this afternoon, morning, or evening, whenever you choose to listen. And I'm joined, as always, by Sam Miller and Chris Alvarado, my two co-hosts. Welcome, gentlemen.
You're going to be the main host?
That's correct. I'm going to be coordinating this episode and kind of bouncing some questions around to each of you and to see how you each respond. And you'll each have 30 seconds to propose your initial response to my question, and then we'll have time for rebuttal and commentary as well.
So just to be clear, this is a podcast about innovative performance with the most traditional introduction a podcast could possibly have.
That's exactly right.
Great.
Okay. Sam, should we start with you? The question today is, how do you feel about subtext in comedic performance, specifically improv? Now, the conventional wisdom, as we all know, is that subtext is frowned upon in improv performance. And I'd like to ask you, as our possibly more traditional perspective on the podcast, how do you feel about subtext in improvised performance?
Well, thank you, Jamie, for throwing the first question towards me.
You have 30 seconds.
Opportunity. First, I just want to say that it's such an honor to be part of this podcast week in and week out. Secondly, subtext is a fascinating thing to talk about in improv, because I think you can totally do subtext if you make it really obvious. Chris is just like, wait, what are you talking about? So subtext, right, just means it's something happening below the text, right? So making something textual would be if I said to you, I love you. That's making it textual. I could make it subtextual if I say, like, ooh, here are the chocolates I got you for Valentine's Day. Oh, I'm going to do this whole thing for us this weekend. It's going to be amazing. You're going to love it, right? Now, if I'm an audience member or another improviser, I should hopefully be able to read what I'm doing pretty well there. I think for beginning improvisers, text is a lot more clear. I think as you get to know people, subtext can sometimes be better. My favorite version of subtext, just to get this in before the end of 30 seconds, if we also apply some level of dramatic irony, right? So if the audience and the performers are in a privileged knowledge position in advance of the characters themselves, right? So the character might not know that there's a dead body behind the door, but the performers in the audience does. Now the text, the subtext is a lot easier to be played because we already know the thing that is being played subtextually. I don't know if that made a lot of sense looking at Chris's face. I'm getting a slow nod here, but I just kind of want to introduce the idea that, like, dramatic irony might be a really fun way to play with subtext at times.
Chris, over to you.
There's no room for it. Subtext. Say what you mean so we can respond and move on. Thank you.
Sam, 15 seconds for rebuttal.
While that is a valid opinion, it is an opinion. It was fascinating. Last night, so my team here in Philly, we've been a Herald team. We are wanting to play a little bit differently, and so we are toying with a pretty flower. And, you know, in a pretty flower-based scene, it's really important to have a deal, right? Chris will appreciate that. We want to have a deal. There are two ways you could establish your deal. You could hint at it a lot, and then it's subtext, or you could just label it, right? I think there's a taste thing there, because if you label it, it's super clear, but it's a little on the nose. It could be a little forced. If you just kind of like keep hitting the same thing over and over again, I don't know. For my taste, I like a good, strong label, but I also hear the people who are going for a more artistic, nuanced, actorly experience.
I don't care about rebuttals and time stuff. Here's the deal with subtext. It's rarely done well. It prolongs the inevitable. The audience sees it. It's so boring to dance around the issue. I want you to say it so we can respond, and then we can build from there. When we're just tiptoeing around the idea that maybe I like you because I'm saying these compliments to you, and it isn't nice, and isn't the dance coming up, and maybe it would be cool to go sometime, but I don't really know if I have a date, but wouldn't that be nice? What? Ask the person so they can respond, and then you can respond. And now we have a scene moving forward. And furthermore, and Sam, I'm being a little harsh, obviously. Maybe it's the experience levels of player I see doing the subtext. It's always done so poorly. And we all see it. We're like, right, you like him or you don't. Or when you're tasting the food and you go, it tastes good, and we know it doesn't. What are we waiting for? What are we waiting for? So then the other person has to pretend that they don't see the response. It's what is that? People think they're clever and cute with that stuff. And to me, I want to heighten everything to a point where it's unrecognizable, Sam. Okay? I can't begin to take one step up if I'm moving laterally and in a circle on a carousel of subtext. And it's not even subtext, by the way, because we all fucking understand what it is. No one's just saying the thing. I do want to say, and then you can respond, last night in our show, ABD, Amanda Blake Davis, said something, but she wasn't trying to have subtext. She just said a line. She said, are you gonna make up with that guy? And then continued to say, because I don't think he's any good for you and you should stay away from him. To which Zach responded, oh, your first line made it seem like you wanted me to make up with the guy. Like, based on he was trying to read the subtext and he misread it. But then that became a fun game. But they're also pros and two of the best who do it. Okay, I said a lot. Thank you. My time is up. Jamie, I love you. 15 seconds now.
Thank you. Yeah, we don't have to worry about the time thing. Chris, I hear what you're saying, and I hear what Sam is saying. I am pro subtext. God damn it.
You'll get to tell the people why you just said God damn it.
No, they can guess. They can guess the subtext. The subtext is, I like subtext, and I think it can be so powerful. It's not often played well because it leans too much into coy and cutesy, which is a branch of subtext, but it's not all encompassing. There is good, valuable, strong, powerful, beautiful subtext. And that's the subtext that I love. I actually prefer it because then we can play with nuances and we can say things without saying them. And sometimes that's the most heartbreaking a scene can be, or the funniest a scene can be. So because it kind of taps into the cultural norms of not always being able to speak fully and freely. And so I really love subtext, but you're right, Chris, it's not often done well. And people often are just playing coy and cutesy. And that's annoying because they're not just getting to the thing.
Sam, I know you want to respond. I like subtext in general. I'm an actor. I like the idea of some depth there, so in general, I do. I think maybe what Jamie is he's saying, I don't see it executed well, please.
Yeah, I will say, like, I am reaching my limit with hesitation and improv. And I don't think we are talking about it in a way that's helpful for intermediate performers. I think we need to say, like, stop with repeat signals of, like, what did you say? Is this the thing you said? Like, I'm just, like, those are just stall moves, right? What Chris, I think you're responding to as well are sort of these stalling moves of the subtext.
Yes.
And as Jamie was talking, I was sort of like imagining, I was like, all right, it's a boss firing an employee, but the subtext is, I can't believe you married my daughter, or I hate that you married my daughter, or whatever. And so it's like, I want you to pack your stuff. I want you to get out of here. You know, like, isn't there a very active scene we could have there of like a firing of someone and like, we're actually getting to it. And I'm thinking about it. I think a lot of times when it's done more successfully, maybe the two performers in the scene know what the subtext is. They both play that subtext in some kind of a way. And then like the last line of the scene is often like, I really hate that you married my daughter. I know, sir, wife, right? Like we actually say the text line and that kind of becomes our heightening. So I wonder if that's a way to play with subtext.
I like that, Sam. I think you're right. I think I'm having an issue with it being like a stalling technique or preventing us from moving forward. But in the example you gave right there, I really liked. Matter of fact, I helped my wife yesterday with the self-tape, and I don't want to say too much for like, I don't want to get her in trouble, but the scene was she's a parent chaperone on a field trip with like high school students, and she's warning the other the other parents about sexual games that the kids might be playing, but the way she's saying it seems like she really wants to be joining in, not with the children, but in her own sexual way. Like, can you imagine they're doing this and they're doing that? And so she's saying the one thing, we need to watch out for the kids, but it was a really fun, that was a great example of subtext. I know I'm cutting myself. I'm not finishing sentences here, but I agree with that, Sam. I just don't want to be stalled.
Yeah, I'm doing a couple of these workshops here in Philly where I'm playing with this language game philosophy that Jamie and I played around with and talked about a lot, and Chris, we tried to work with you a little bit on, and
me dum dum.
No, not you dum dum, but like there was a academic level to it that we did not want to put on a stage, right? But one of the things that sort of is coming up is like, well, when you say something, do you do something? And I think in improv a lot, if I say like, I want to be a cheerleader, I'm going to then be, you know, encouraged like, all right, do cheerleader things, like do like cheer on stage, cheer for people, as opposed to the character who's like, we're not going to allow dancing in this town and they can't stop dancing. Right. And now they're saying something, but they're not doing it. And I think there's something interesting there that I haven't yet had the chance to play around with, but I think there's a richness to play with.
So Chris, are you still no subtext in improv? You just don't trust people with it, or how would you teach subtext so that we can stop the coy crap?
Wow, that's interesting. That I've never actually considered.
Can we just have that workshop, stop the coy crap? That should just be the title of the workshop.
Yeah.
Well, I've been using like the three C's for a while that I came up with: coy, cute, and clever. I keep seeing that over and over, and I just don't have time for it. It's just again stalling the progression of the scene. That's interesting, Jamie, the idea of teaching that, because here's my issue right now: nobody is heightening to a point that I want them to heighten, just as an exercise. And I've made up these different exercises recently. One's called like Crazy Together. I just want you to start with one emotion, heighten through it to a point that the scene is unrecognizable, that we're just two blabbering blobs on stage. Constantly, constantly, people are preventing themselves from getting to that place. And I think subtext might be one of the symptoms, it's not the reason why people aren't getting there, but I'm just trying to remove the barriers. Give me some clarity, just in the classroom, some clarity so we can move forward with it. One thing that the park does so well is they heighten to a point of actual physical danger. Sam, we famously talked about one on this podcast where, I know it's not the park, but where you held the table over your head. Like, that's what I'm looking for. And so many people don't get there because I don't know why. I don't know what I'm saying anymore.
Go ahead, Sam.
Well, I was just going to say, I love this coy, cute, clever thing, and so I'm flipping it. So what I should be is bold, ugly, and dumb, which I kind of love as a strategy of like going onto stage.
And that needs to be the workshop name. Bold, ugly, and dumb.
That's great.
But let me guys ask you a question, because as Chris, as you were talking, I am trying to push myself, because I'm a very verbal person, away from words and scenes. And so like, how can I heighten to an emotional state of nonsense? Right. I'm just making noises that are emotive, but
yeah,
actually have any text to them. So at that point in time, or if I'm doing a silent scene, how does subtext relate to a silent scene or a gibberish scene or a scene where, you know, all of my sounds are just like noises as opposed to words?
I think in those examples, and each one would be slightly different, but maybe text is the wrong word, but the literal. So if you're doing a silent scene and I'm literally picking up a cup, that would be the text of the scene. But if I'm picking up a cup in a way that it looks like something else, then that would be the subtext of the scene, because I'm treating the cup in a different, I don't know. It's not a one-for-one comparison, but that's, I think of literality as the unifying factor in those different versions.
We could do a scene, Sam, in gibberish where we understand that I'm some sort of authority reprimanding you, maybe a boss firing an employee as a blah, 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 as I'm barking at you in the face, then I also stroke your hair and then blah, 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 and kind of start to give you a massage. And maybe we see that, like, yes, you're in trouble for whatever professional thing, but then there's like this, the subtext of the sexual or the romantic coming through. I don't know, I just made that up. Like, how to show that in a silent or gibberish scene would be interesting.
Yeah. Well, subtext inherently has built into its meaning something different than the text. Otherwise, it would just, you wouldn't really have subtext, because if you had subtext, that text that aligned perfectly, then you're not really, that's not really how I understand subtext. So there's always some kind of delta between the two. And maybe that's where the tension lies or the fun lies. It's the difference between the text and the subtext that is either dramatic or funny or something like that. You both have the same, don't move. You both have the same exact pose. And I'm taking a screenshot. Got it.
It's very interesting to hear you say that, because now I'm thinking of situations where, like, you know, it's a romantic couple. It's like, oh, I hate you so much. I know, I hate you too. Right? Like, we're saying something with our words that we're not really saying with our tone.
Yeah. Let's, right now we're in the advanced version. Let's back it up just a hair again to the why. Less experienced, and I'm sure more experienced, but I, you know, spent time in the classroom. Why less experienced improvisers lean on that so much, on the coyness, on the saying one thing but meaning another, to the point where it's delaying the forward progression of the scene? Why do they feel so comfortable? Why is that a tool? Why do young improvisers tend to spend time there? I have my own theories because I see it a lot. But again, the example of two students at a locker room, I mean, pardon me, at like a locker in a hallway of a high school, and one of the students says to the other, wow, the dance is coming up. I'd sure like to go. That's a nice dress. Boy, dances are fun. So we understand that person wants to go with that person, right, to the dance. So many times, though, students will keep doing that over and over and over, even to a point where student B might respond, do you want to go to the dance with me? And student A goes back and goes, well, I mean, you know, dances are weird, but it's just that, like, you know, I like dance. It's like, you know, even in that example, sorry, this is like such a weird, boring example, we're still not moving forward with this. And I wonder, are we afraid? I want to hear your theories. Are we afraid to lay it out because then our idea is over, because we don't know what's coming next? Where if we spend time in this zone, we know the game is keep being coy about wanting to go to the dance. And maybe the performer is scared of the unknown when I say it, and now the other player gets to respond. And now what is probably their question, please.
I love this example. I think there's a lot there. What I tend to see is that we tell people to react how they would in their normal life, and then we get upset when they react like they would in their normal life.
Absolutely.
But I would also say there's a coy choice to play that scene at the locker room before the dance, because the more interesting choice to me would be at the dance with the person you want to be with. And I think this skill kind of goes into that, of just sort of like, how do we activate these things? How do we say things that we wouldn't say in our real life to sort of create these situations that are heightened, more heightened than real life?
I think, Chris, you're right. I think people are afraid of stepping off the precipice. They don't know, like, we know that we're going to build up to going to the dance. And so we're in this comfort zone of this. We understand this. We understand this. Once you go to the dance, and you're like, now what? And that now what moment, I think, scares people and holds people back. I think just generally, I don't know if this is a universal thing or if this is like a 2024 thing, but I was just talking to Liam about this. We had a show on Saturday where this kind of came up verbally, and Sam and I used to play a lot with this physically, of putting each other in danger, of like going too far. You know, people are afraid to hurt each other's feelings, even though we're all playing characters. You know, we're afraid to put each other in dangerous physical positions. Sam and I got to a place where we were okay with that, I think, for the most part. And so we could really go there and go to those levels where we don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how long Sam is going to hold that very heavy table above his head and if he needs my help or not. That was, you know, a fun, exciting, dangerous situation. And this last show, we had a show where, you know, Liam was playing a rat. I know it's no fun to hear it, but hear me out. Liam was playing a rat and he had a translator, and the translator was a female performer who was translating his rat into English. And the rat was accusing another female performer of something. And Liam was just squeaking, but the female translator was like, "You blonde-haired bitch and your small tits," like things that Liam probably could not have got away with. She was going for, because that was like the tone of the situation. And it was so enjoyable for me to see people just go for it, because we often see people hold back and reserve because they don't want to hurt each other's feelings. They don't want to, you know, they bring their street selves onto the stage with them, and then they hold back the way they would as if they were with friends on the street. And so I think there's just a general, for whatever reason, there's a problem with people just holding back and being afraid to just go. And so I think that's my long way of saying, I think this all ties in. People are just afraid of the unknown, of hurting each other's feelings, of getting themselves into trouble. And that's kind of the whole ethos of clown. Is I hear from clown teachers all the time, the instruction is get yourself in trouble on stage, like get yourself into hot water so that you can get yourself out of it. But you can't get yourself out of hot water if you never got it in the first place. You just have this lukewarm performance, to keep the metaphor going.
Yeah, you said something that I'm personally having some frustrations with. And so you said, just go. And I think that sounds like we're giving actionable advice when we're actually not. If I tell a performer to just go, they have no idea what to go, like where to go, like how am I going? What am I doing? As opposed to if I say to a performer, there are lines you can use to help yourself move this scene forward. So right now you're playing coy. What if you said, here's the thing, and then you laid out the thing? That would be a way for us to start going more directly at this. Or if you're talking about going to a dance, but you really just like want to dance, what if you started doing the dance itself? And so now your go is dance more and harder and harder and harder and harder. And so what I'm seeing with some people is, we're expecting them to take it to a 10 and they don't know how to take it to like a 4 yet, because they're not sure how to get from the 3 to the 4. And I'm not saying that this is perfect. I know we have a lot of very talented performers listening to us, but like, these are just kind of things that I've been thinking about lately to try to help people get over this hump to heighten more. Right.
But is, I mean, even let's say they're stuck at a 2 and they can't even get to a 4 and we're telling them to go to a 10. Is, I like the ambiguity of go as opposed to, God damn it, as opposed to outlining step by step what they should do, because I don't think heightening is very linear, especially when you reach the upper levels getting towards a 10. It's not mad, matter, maddest. Sometimes it's mad, matter in love. You know, it's like heightening is not linear. So I wouldn't want to say keep going with X, Y, and Z, because that kind of creates a trajectory for them to then follow through with. And I know there's probably a million examples that counter what I just said, but that's how I think of it, is just go, because then it allows them to kind of just rev themselves up and they can follow wherever their mind body lines are leading them.
Yeah. I mean, you can certainly have a character arc in a scene where you start with one emotion and it evolves to another emotion. Right. I mean, I'm not saying like you can't heighten out of that stuff. And I think there are 1,000 different ways to come at this, right? Just start the scene at an emotional 10 and then figure out why you're at an emotional 10 and back up your way in there. I think there are ways, sort of like physical danger, right? How do you get yourself into emotional danger? Or how can you like prompt your subconscious to start speaking for you in some ways and get yourself into danger that way? There are many, many tools that I think we can provide people, but I also think we can provide people the tool of like, you're an actor on stage. Your character wants something. Do you know what your character wants? Great. So go after that. Okay, you're not going after that hard enough. Go after that harder. Go after that the hardest you could imagine any person in the world doing it. Okay, now heighten that to any person in history, right? I mean, it's challenging because I have a writing background, and so I see a lot of these writing things just not being talked about, of like character wants and what's your intent in this scene, you know? Like, yes, we're supposed to have like a stage picture, but do people think to themselves, like, what is my character doing right now in this location that gives them some business? Every time people just end up standing around with cups because they just aren't thinking in that writerly sense of like, these people are here for a reason, right?
Yeah. See, I think a lot of times that want, that POV, that intent, that's where, not always, but that's where the subtext lives, right? You can say, I want candy. And then the rest of the scene, you are pursuing candy. But that feels thin and boring. It's like having a scene about the space work that you're doing, right? As opposed to if you have a want or a point of view and you're just acting on it, maybe that want or the point of view is the subtext behind it and not the actual text itself.
Yeah, so this is where I get really frustrated, is like, we can't blend want and point of view. They're not the same thing, right? I want something because of a point of view. So if I want candy, why do I want candy? That's my point of view. I want candy because sweet things don't last. Okay. Now that's my point of view. So now when I'm talking to my loved one, right, I have sweet things don't last. It doesn't have to be about like the specific of candy anymore. So like the thing that I am struggling against currently is these are all things that get talked about in writing material that I don't know how much we're talking about them in improv. And it just feels like people are missing pieces of information about how plays get written. I think we assumed people used to have this knowledge that they don't anymore. Chris is shaking his head no, so I could be very way off base here.
I mean, a lot was said, but I was shaking my head no at the idea that people are missing pieces of information. On the contrary, they have too much information right now, and it's preventing them from making these moves. I see it all the time. It's very difficult for a student to step outside of themselves and look at the scene in a macro way and trying to figure out what's going on and what it is they want, because they're in the middle of saying the words, go to the dance, and that's already taking up 98% of their engine. Unfortunately, because you ask them to then also pick up a glass, the wheels are coming off that scene. And it's really interesting that it's the patting in the head and the rubbing of the stomach or whatever that thing is, how often people crumble as they're, and some even who know what's up, as they're trying to ask themselves those questions. Even the few that know how to ask themselves that questions in the middle of a scene, I don't know, they're doing the math homework of saying, what is my point of view, which is different than from what I want. And they're doing that while trying to listen to the person who just said a line. There's a disconnect here. Or you see the person do the quick, I've learned that if I just say my thing out loud, then I can play the thing. So it's like, I just really like to dance. And then they're just dancing the whole time. And then they dance, which is at least one step further, one step towards something that's activated. Hold on, give me one more second here, because I'm picturing one student in particular. I want to say two last points. Here's Sam, you said something earlier at the beginning of you two talking, which is it's hard for a lot of students want to react as they normally quote unquote would in real life. And I often have to tell them, I totally understand why you made that choice. That's a very human choice to make, to have a series of complicated emotions based on something that's being said to you. To simplify it for yourself, you need to just, it needs to just be, and this is where I'm leading to. For me, I also have the same series of questions, but I only ask myself one question, which is this, yes or no. It just flies through me, all the information. I go yes or no, then I act on that. Yes or no. Yes, I want to, let's go. No, I don't, let's go. Both ways, I'm activating, okay? because I understand that this person wants to go to the dance with this other character, but that other character dated his brother 2 months ago, and there's a code between brothers that you don't date, but he does like her even though she had some bad behaviors while she was dating. See, people are doing real life human behavior calculations on stage, and we can't move past it. And when I ask them what's going on, they give me those answers, and I validate that because I understand, because they go, I'm just trying to act like I would in real life. I would process all these different things, all this more information. The last thing they need, Sam, is now another fucking formula to clink, clink, clink. So to me, I just go, yes, no. I want to be with this person. Do I want to be with this person? Yeah, great, let's go. Boom. No, let's go. And I can still heighten both ways. Neither of those, there's no right or wrong in there. Okay. Sorry, that was weird. There was only I don't know if any of that made sense. Talk to me, Sam.
No, it totally makes sense. Heightening a positive feeling or heightening a negative feeling, I think, is a very great way for people who are, you know, 2 or 3 years into improv and have had a lot of different things thrown at them, and they just like kind of need to heighten in a scene. That's fair. I think I'm trying to get away from scenes where logical, nice, rational people are acting logically, nicely, and rationally. And what I see a lot is they're like, well, that wasn't funny. I'm like, you're right. That wasn't funny because you were pretty close to yourself and you're a good person, and you were pretty close to yourself and you're a good person. And that's what we saw. And if our goal is improvised rom-com or something like that, maybe there's room for some of that stuff in there, or, you know, improvised drama or whatever. If we're going for comedy, for my taste, we need a little bit more like bold, ugly, dumb. And it could be, I want dance. It's pretty stupid, right? And then the big complaint, and I keep seeing this places, and it's really driving me crazy. The big complaint I see is that's game of the scene. And now we know what that whole scene is. I'm just going to see that person dance. And what I'm offering is that what I was taught, and I was kind of spoiled by Jen Kruger teaching me this, is let's push one level past that to the question of why. Why do I want to dance? Because I want to find fun exercise. I want, you know, there's another want that's a little bit more abstract. I work in software now, so we have this idea of sort of like one level more of abstraction. And that can be done in a ton of different ways, right? I can do fun exercise in the military. I can do fun exercise on the moon. I that can travel in a more interesting way, in a more unique way, that if someone else did dance and then they answered why, it would be a different answer for them. And when I think about student performers and students finding their voices, the places where I'm most tickled is when I say to them, hey, someone misbehave in this scene. And then their choice of misbehavior always surprises me, because my idea of what would be a misbehavior and their idea is something different. And then I say, okay, why did you do that? And so now they have to explain a philosophy for why someone would do something inappropriate. But we are off to the races.
But Sam, I used to spend a lot of time there. That was my basis for point of view, is like, we'd get there by asking ourselves why. And then sometimes, a lot of times, the students that were learning more would then say that philosophy in the scene to justify their absurd behavior. I think today, I don't care about that. And I don't mean it to be so dismissive, like all sweeping across the board, because none of this is. It changes from scene to scene and day to day. But now I see that. It sticks out. I'm like, oh, they're doing that part of the thing where they say the reason why they're acting this way. I used to use a stupid example of like, if you want to go around in the scene shooting pigs, that's fine, but you got to tell us why. Maybe your philosophy is that your parents were farmers and they both died, so you want to send the souls of the pigs up to heaven to spend time with your parents who are in heaven. It's also a prevention of the heightening. And furthermore, Sam, yeah, when we require people to justify their absurd behavior, they're not going to make absurd behaviors because they don't want to be in a position where now they have to come up with a philosophy later on. Instead, just kill the pigs.
Sure. You can just kill the pigs if you want to just kill the pigs. After 5 minutes, it's going to be pretty thin. So someone better edit that scene.
5 minutes? Don't worry. I've never seen a scene go longer than three and a half minutes.
I think everything can be justified by saying my parents are getting a divorce, or my partner just died. literally everything can be justified that way because you're like, yeah, oh, of course someone's going to act that way. And then the way I was taught, you've justified away the fun. What I'm trying to get to is a place where, why would someone kill pigs? Well, they're trying to make a lot of bacon. What's the opposite of making bacon? I want to eat healthier. So why am I killing pigs? Well, I'm trying to eat healthier. Now I have to make that make sense. Like, that's kind of non-logical. Like, that's, it's not perfect. It doesn't always work, but it's just me trying to apply some of this clown logic stuff of like, what is logical? What's the opposite of logical? How do I play that? Where can that take me? Well, if I kill all the animals in the world, then I won't have to eat that bacon. So I'll only eat healthy. I'm depriving myself of it. Oh, great. Now I can go to Walmart and destroy it, or I can deprive myself.
You know what, Sam, right? I really like that example. The problem is somehow lately, who knows? Like I said, and this might change tomorrow, but somehow right now I'm really into like the energy and the cadence of a particular piece. And I want to see it continue to move without bogging down moments of explanation for, and who's the explanation for? For the audience, for themselves, so that we're all on board with the absurd behavior. That's it. I mean, I'm just talking aloud. I do like that idea. It's a funny premise, but to me, that should be a sketch then. That should write that down, because that's a funny sketch. I want to see people, I want to see these flights of fancy and just moving from place to place without a lot of explanation anymore. Scenes in the middle of scenes changing, whatever. I'm going insane.
Well, it sounds like what we're talking about is actually text versus subtext. Do you verbalize your justification, point of view, why you're doing something, or do you let the audience just put it together if they can, and you just keep acting the way that you're inspired to do so and let the audience figure it out? You know, I don't think we have to spoon feed rationalizations to the audience. The audience is much smarter. If they're paying attention to your show, they'll put together way more than you probably would for them. So just let them do that.
Yeah.
Sam, respond to that, because I still really like your example.
I think we're all maybe circling around the same thing, and I'm seeing a lot of this where it's like it's this wandering indirect energy, right? Where we're still feeling things out. And like, I just want people to play their thing a little harder with a little bit more focus and energy. And so if like, you know, your thing is that you want to ask that person to the date, and you play the whole scene, like you could spend the whole scene setting up your promposal, right? Of like, you're putting up a banner, you're like bringing in a band, like you could do all of that and just playing it hard and not necessarily saying like, I want you to come with me to the dance quite yet, but you could be playing that idea at the very least. I think I just see so many people maybe even using subtext as an excuse.
Well,
like,
it's
okay, because, yeah, that's what I'm doing. Go ahead.
It's because I want to know that they know. And most of the players I see don't know. Mm. And I don't mean have all the answers. I just want to believe you for a second. What's happening is I'm seeing the look of fear or panic in the eyes of these students as they're doing a scene, and they're putting off going further because they're going to get more and more scared. It's really weird. It's really weird because I don't disagree with everything we're saying here. I mean, all of it, but it's like, I guess we're just afraid to move forward, and sometimes subtext does move us forward when we know what's up, and sometimes subtext holds us back when we're using it as a buffer of, as we're using it as a placeholder to think of something better to do, you know. I don't know. I'm just, why aren't people blasting off? Why aren't people blasting off? And I'll do an exercise after exercise where I'm making them blast off. Even one that we did in a clown class once, which is just, all right, be happy at a one, at a two, at a three, at a four, at a five. At a five, you're hysterically laughing. You can use it with sadness. At five, you're crying. One, it's just you're sad. Two, three, four, five. And then we'll just walk around the space. All right, now you're at a three. Now you're at a two. Now a five. Now a two. Now a one. To play with feeling what that feels like in your body. And yet when we put them on stage or it's time for a scene, all something else just comes up and prevents them from moving to these levels. It's so strange. We see a lot of twos, we see a lot of tens that peter out, right, into a two, which is also interesting. That's a different topic. These people coming on like, hey, I'm a nervous improviser screaming right now loud, where I'm projecting confidence even though I don't know what I'm saying, and now we're here.
Yeah, I mean, it's been funny. I've watched a bunch of the live directs, and one of the things I've noticed is that, Chris, I think one of the things you often do is direct heightening. It's go, 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 go. And I'm really amazed at that. I'm like, what? Because I have this problem as a performer. What is inside me that I'm not doing that heightening? Why am I not recognizing that? Am I so focused on the words? I'm not playing that energy. Yeah, I definitely feel that.
Yeah, I mean, we need to be honest with ourselves. A lot is going on. A lot is going on. And so I think sometimes maybe the heightening part is that last little bit over here. I'm still trying to figure out how I feel about this person while I'm buckling my seatbelt and making sure that the key goes into the right part of the ignition in my car and responding to some wordplay because this person did a double entendre. So like, we are spending time in here. Heightening is coming. And you know, also I'm on the outside, so I can feel the cadence and be like, okay, we get it. Let's go. But from within the trenches, it's a little different.
I think too, to really go fully crazy, like past a 10 into the red zone of heightening, which is where the magic happens. It feels as a performer, like you want permission, because if I just felt it and just started going nuts, like, would it be received? Does it look desperate and sad? Is it confusing to an audience member to go that insane? But having Chris there to say go, like, that's the permission to then start going nuts, because now the audience sees what's happening. They're in, because I feel like if people just go insane, it might not be fun. It might not be enjoyable to watch that without having at least had the permission to do so. I don't know.
In a show.
In a show.
I agree. I agree. Yeah, but that's why in the classroom, we need to be going crazy. We need to be going crazy just to touch that side of it. Please, Sam.
Yeah. You know, we used to talk about like earning it, and like, how can you sort of like earn that big heightened reaction? And I think for my taste, you know, some of the things that Chris is talking about, like just say the thing, right? If I'm at the point where I am now saying to you, like, I love you, I want to spend the rest of my life with you, I'm going to take you to prom, like, that is, I now have permission to like go crazy in love like that, right? If I don't say that, it's going to be really weird when I'm, you know, hanging off the rafters or whatever that sort of like crazy version is.
Yeah. I did a Heyday show last night, and I watched some of the video this morning, just kind of scrolling through. The way I get to heightening places, I don't know if this episode is heightening or if it's subtext, but whatever, is physicality. I don't have the brain power to like heightened statement. I'm like I said, me dumb. So I'm always heightening. I danced last night. I ate both Zach and Amanda at the same time. I got snapped on by an alligator. I sang a song. Like, that's my thing, is like moving it, going to the physical. I tell my people that all the time. You're in your brain, you're in your stuff, reach out, right? Touch the thing. That'll take you somewhere. Back to the park. Jamie and Liam, like you, Sam, do have the brain power to heighten verbally, which they do, but they also have the wherewithal to go through that physical place, which they do, which makes it a really fun time. That it's not just the goofball brigade like screaming or throwing chairs, but it's also not just like smarty pants improv where it's just like all wordplay. It's this fun combination of both heightening. It's really, really neat. The end.
Thanks.
Yeah, those live direct shows have been interesting, Sam, because this last one, I'm not trying to do, well, sure I am, a little plug for it, but the last one, I felt this bit of panic on the side, Sam, which was, this is a good show. I don't really need to say much. And I'm trying to find that balance between like injecting for the sake of the gimmick, you know?
It's interesting because I was watching it and I was thinking about this sort of like genre of the commentary form, I've mentioned on this podcast before, Community Science Theater 3000 is one of my favorites that does this, where they have like two audience plans that are basically doing it. And, you know, I think there's definitely a question of like, well, what is the director's agenda tonight? Right? What is this director character's agenda? Because I'm not here to see the park, right? I'm here to see a show that has a director. Now, is this director a logical, rational, kind person? Maybe. But what if they were a bold, ugly, dumb director? What would they be doing then? There might be some trickster for you to explore.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we're trying to do our best to stay away from some of the other popular live direct shows in Los Angeles and just try a different.
I'm curious about that too, because it is not the only live direct show in Los Angeles.
It is not, and it's not the most popular one either. That said,
least popular.
I'm sorry.
It's the least popular live direct.
It's the least popular live direct show in. Well, it's the most popular live direct show in Santa Monica. Least popular in Los Angeles, because we don't do it in Los Angeles. Only Santa Monica. I have gotten really interesting feedback though from improvisers, which I think is interesting. I'm sure, I know the audience likes it as well, a general audience, like they have a good enough time, but I've had like genuine conversations with people about what they about how they enjoyed it from a improviser's perspective. Or like as a matter of fact, yesterday I couldn't make it, but somebody invited me, one of their teammates had dropped off. I could either play with this person and their teammate, or I could live direct them. They thought that would be an interesting idea. And I think part of the fun for the improviser is seeing that I am being genuine and trying to push this to a good place, not just doing a gimmick, not just being the mean guy. But then the fear is, like I said, is like spending time over here being like, well, I don't have anything to say.
Anyway. Yeah. No, I agree. Part of the fun is not necessarily, and Chris can do whatever we want, we're still figuring out what this even looks like, but is not, you know, being an obnoxious, cruel director. It's what I see people responding to is it's almost like we're putting this podcast on its feet. Like we're playing with stuff and Chris is there to kind of, well, what about this? You know, it's like it's an actual genuine exploration of these different ideas and moments and concept, kind of putting them on their feet or taking something back or trying something new. So it's kind of actualizing just these conversations that we're having, like the one we have right now. And I think that's what a lot of the, especially because it's mostly an improviser audience, if not entirely improvisers, they appreciate that. And I think it's intellectually interesting and hopefully also an interesting show, but it's, you know, gets them to think about their own performance and their own, you know, what they're learning in class and stuff like that. So it's more of like a supplement to a class than it is, you know, this wild, crazy director show.
I've always had this idea. Oh, Sam, what'd you say?
I'm just teasing. I'm just teasing about it being a supplement to class.
Well, kind of to that point, we've talked about this before. I don't know if it was here. I know Jamie and I have talked about it in person, but I've always had this like fantasy of like renting, you know, space at the Santa Monica Playhouse, as I always do, and inviting all the teams I coach there to sit to, and then I coach each team for, I don't know, however many minutes or whatever, just kind of, we're all watching it together, like basically an audience for a rehearsal, except that everybody gets a shot at being up there. Some, obviously it's still a little weak, but there's something interesting about that idea. I don't know if a general audience would want to see that, but it would, I think there's something fun there. I don't know. I think there's something cool there.
Well, yeah, you bring up something that a lot of people don't get to see, the other people's rehearsal process. What does it look like when Improvised Shakespeare is rehearsing? What does it look like when Cook County Social Club is rehearsing? Like that itself is very informative and instructive to see behind the curtain of different groups, to kind of see what you can take and, you know, expand beyond your own subculture.
Yeah, it almost even has like a festival feel to it, which would be really fun. Or just sort of like, you know, side coach. Everyone does their form. You're just going to like side coach them through their form. You hang out for 2 hours, you watch a bunch of shows, and everyone gets to laugh.
Yeah. Festivals are weird. Anyway, we should do an episode on festivals.
Yeah, we had Steel Stacks, which was fun a couple of weeks ago. But
How did your sitcom go?
Went well. I did my solo sitcom on Sunday. I've been working on uploading the video, so I'll send it to you guys. I have mixed feelings. I got a really nice compliment from the woman who provided the suggestion. She, I think, does not do a lot of improv, was my impression, and she was very impressed. And so that was really nice to hear. And I've had some good feedback from other people. But I do feel like I had a better one in rehearsal. Maybe because in rehearsal, when I'm rehearsing by myself, I have more time and I have more pauses in there. But it was just like, I don't, maybe I want to do this one again just because I do feel like there's a next level to get to it. But
De definitely do it again. Definitely
yeah.
do it again. Congratulations on that. That's tough to do.
Thanks. It's interesting. I've talked to people about their solo shows, and there is like a very presentational version, and then there's a version where you are changing your seat to play multiple characters. And it's the changing seat, man. It's a little, I'm like, do I want to just do it at like a bat? Do I just want to do it, in the dark, basically? But
I know.
But
Like
thank you
it's,
for asking. It's very kind.
of course, no, of course. Also, before we head out here, I want to just say, this podcast feels very similar to me to the shows I've been uploading on my YouTube, where it's just like a catalog of information. It's not like, I mean, hopefully it's entertaining, but like I'm not doing any production value on that thing. It's there for me, so somebody one day will go, oh, that guy did something. But recently, Sam, I don't know, I think I have 10 subscribers or something like that. I don't know, I have no idea, to be honest. But I woke up and there was two comments on two videos, and I was like, huh, that's interesting. And it was somebody from New Zealand who said they heard from you, Sam, on the podcast that you had watched the videos and that it was fun to see us in action, and furthermore said it was on I was on one video, and then on the other video saying it was fun to see Jamie's kind of clown that we talk about so much, and the kind of trickster talks on the podcast in a video. So it made me so happy that one person in New Zealand saw two videos and like, as like show tape almost, and I mean that from the very bottom of my heart, like no ego or like just like cool. That's the point of it. I want it to be there as a resource. And so, Sam, thank you for mentioning that. And I thought I should have mentioned it officially, although it's embarrassing because when I created a YouTube account in 2004, the name I picked was at improvisational. Is that how that still works, Sam? Is that how they would search it, or they would just search Chris Alvarado YouTube, or do they look up a YouTube name like improvisational? Who knows?
Let's do it. We can do
Oh,
this live.
great. We did this to my website and it sent me into a dark place
So I'm going to
last
search for
week.
At the end of every episode is just 10 minutes workshopping Chris's brand.
Improvisational is going to be hard. Let's see here. What if I.
Oh, interesting. But that's the name.
There are other people named Chris Alvarado.
Okay, well, then
Here
I don't
you are.
know.
Just take care of yourself. Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I know. If we do. Inside the park. Oh, this is going to be so hot. Oh.
Okay. Also, I have a link to all of the videos to my YouTube on my Instagram at Chris Alvarado. I don't know. I can't believe it's that difficult to find, but that makes sense, I guess.
You can go to the address youtube.com/@improvisational. So don't
Cool.
search it, just go to
Okay, everybody. That's www. Okay. Well, thank you. But there's a lot of videos there that I don't know, it's cool. Also, on the way out, I wanted to mention some more business. I'm wearing a sweater that Jamie made. Is that how you say that, Jamie? Had
Yeah.
made. I'm wearing cl some clown cardio apparel. A big launch is coming up. Is that right, Jamie? Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's right. We have our photo shoot coming up tomorrow. Chris is our style advisor. And the official store launch should be on Friday if everything goes according to plan.
What's that date?
That should be the 10th. Whatever the 10th is, that's going to be the launch date. It's either Friday or Saturday. It's Friday. No, it's Saturday.
February 10th, 2024.
February 10th, 2024. But why wait? There's a 20% discount if you message me on Instagram and order now, because this isn't This isn't discount Black Friday time.
No.
The prices will never be this low again. So
no.
Get it or pay that extra 20%. But either way, I appreciate the support, you know. And Chris looks great in the sweater. You all can't see him, but just...
I wear it all the time. I wear it all the time. And also check out Clown Car- theclowncardio.com. Or is it clowncardio.com?
The Clown Cardio.
Theclowncardio.com for classes. Speaking of classes... Dude, I'm almost full. I haven't even done a full push of advertisement. And I have, as of this morning, I have 7 students. I'm letting 12 in. I have 7 students for my upcoming 6-week, which begins March 7th, 2024. It's a 6-week class at the Santa Monica Playhouse. You can go to chris-alvarado.com for more information. And for real, for more information. Because today I spent some time really working out what it is I want to say about this class. Forever, I've been doing this. Have some fun. Let's explore improv. No. I'm a dum-dum. I've said 3 times today. And I just started writing. And I just cleaned it up a little bit, Sam. You're a writer. And I wanted to get it out loud. So I think I got my message. It's a little long, but it's for everybody. And the short of it is, if you've been doing this for a long time, I want to reintroduce you to the joy, right? I want to get you to a place that you remembered when you first found improv and all the possibilities that were before you until we got pushed down by these outdated rules. And if you're new, perfect. A place that I'm going to introduce you to freedom for your imagination and introduce you to concepts like slowing things down, heightening to a place of absurdity, physicality, all this stuff. It's going to be great. And I'm really on fire about it. Sorry I went so long.
No, I will say, you know, listeners, I see a lot of what goes on behind the scenes with Chris. And I feel like he's found his voice. He's found this tone. He's found this artistic, everything's kind of coalesced and really feels like it's aligned in a very cool, fresh way. So I recommend it. I'm very excited to see all the stuff that Chris is up to. And he's the fucking Andy Warhol of improv. So
Sam,
what do you got?
I have a couple of things to plug actually, but before I get to that, I was going to even text you, Chris, because I've been thinking about this. I want to go on the record. I think you are smart. There are many times on this show where you will say like some reference that I don't even know. And you're like, is that right? And it is right. And so nice. I just wanted you to know that I actually think you're smarter than you might think you are. Cause I definitely think you're a pretty bright guy.
Thank you very much. I love you, Sam.
I love you too, buddy. I'm excited because I have like 3 things that I'll talk about here. Tonight, we're starting my February month of workshops focused on scene work and using some of these pragmatic games. So a lot of like whose turn is it to speak and cueing each other and how to get out of these scripted like negotiation transaction kind of situations. So very excited to be playing around with that. I will be teaching at Philly Improv Theater again. They asked me to come back and teach the improvised movie. So very excited to do that this spring. You can go to Philly Improv Theater, Google it to sign up for class. We've still got a couple spots left. And then I've almost locked it in, but just to give people a preview, there's a book called 8 Characters of Comedy. That's a really great book on sitcom acting. And I just did my solo sitcom. And I really feel like these are very easy games for improvisers, right? You play the neurotic or the womanizer, manizer, or someone who's in their own world. These are very big character games that I think make scenes a lot more accessible and a lot easier for people to just like be a character and play. So I'm going to do a weekend intensive on that in Philadelphia in May. I'll announce more of that on the show as it's coming up. But if you're in the Mid-Atlantic region, New York, DC, or you want to come enjoy Philadelphia for a little bit of time. Super excited to do that weekend intensive.
I want to take one of your classes. I'm looking at the Philly website right now. Anyway, okay.
Well,
yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, this has been the Comedy Fix. We hope you've enjoyed listening to us this afternoon, morning, or evening, whenever you've chosen to listen. But now it's our turn. We'd love to hear from you. Feel free to message us at the Comedy Fix on Instagram, and we always share the comments with the group and respond to it. And hey, you might get a shout out on the next episode. Until then, friends, see you then.
Bow, 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 bow.
Thank you.